This programme was first broadcast on ORFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to Bringing Wellbeing to Life, the programme that takes wellbeing research off the page and into our lives. I'm Dr. Denise Quinlan, and today we're talking about the different approaches that schools use to build whole school wellbeing for students, staff and community. My guest today is Mike Anderson, who's the principal of Waimarie School in Christchurch here in New Zealand. And something that you might not know about Mike, and that he probably won't tell you, so I will, is that his school is currently a finalist in the Excellence Awards.
Prime Minister's Excellence Awards.
The Prime Minister's Excellence Awards for the work they have done in adapting the school to meet the needs of five-year-olds, new entrants coming to the school. And hopefully we're going to talk more about that. Mike, we're delighted to have you with us. Welcome to Bringing Wellbeing to Life.
Kia ora, thank you.
So, we know that Waimarie has been working on wellbeing for quite some time now, and one of the things we were really excited about was the fact that you decided to use psychological capital as your kind of framework for working on wellbeing. Tell us a bit about how you came to that and what made you choose it.
We came to it through it came onto my radar through some professional reading. We like to throw our net wider than just educational reading. Yeah. And so I read, I think, one of Fred Luthen's papers, and thought, that's very interesting. Yeah. And I started to think about it in a school setting, and then I got on with my day. Yeah. And several weeks later, one of our external critical friends, Dr. Catherine Savage, who's a child psychologist who we engage as an external critical friend to challenge our thinking and stop us falling in love with our own ideas, said she had been reading an interesting article about PsyCap and had started to wonder what it would look like in a school. And I said, snap!
Oh, nice.
Let's do it. Yeah. And so that was just a serendipitous exchange that both of us had read similar articles and thought, this may have potential in a school.
So tell me how you define and describe psychological capital to your staff.
We frame it under the umbrella of positive psychology generally, and I think it was good at the beginning. We explained the point of difference between deficit model, the repair, fixing, healing, and actually filling a fuel tank so that when crap happens, you're going to use a bit of fuel up, but you're not going to hit empty.
Nice.
So that's that broad framework. And then we looked at the pillars of PsyCap, the
hero, and
when we started unpacking those, we found strong links to what we know from our ed psych work as trained teachers, particularly around efficacy.
Okay, so for people who aren't familiar,
the
four pillars are hope, self-efficacy, resilience, and optimism.
And
you found that they really connected to
Existing understandings that we had, particularly when we started unpacking efficacy.
Teacher self-efficacy or teachers?
Both. Teacher self-efficacy. So John Hattie's research on things that have a big effect on learning, and before him, Professor Graham Nuttall, in the 1970s and 80s.
Landmark book,
Hidden Lives of Learners.
Teacher
self-efficacy. Huge.
Yeah.
Yes. And also with students, self-efficacy. Yeah. When we got into the PsyCap literature, we found Tony Bandura's name coming up a lot in that, and his work's a cornerstone of child
self-efficacy
and motivation. And Carol Dweck, not so much for her mindset
work,
but her other contribution to psychology.
And we know that academic self-efficacy predicts engagement, predicts achievement. And so I'm interested because psychological capital so far has largely been used in workplaces with the idea that it's a resource that an organisation can build that will give them competitive advantage.
Yes.
So how did you frame that within your school?
Well, we don't want competitive advantage, but we want strong levels of capital. So I used a business analogy and said that firms that have a strong balance sheet have financial capital, and that accounting term, capital.
Yeah.
So if you're running a small business and it's got adequate levels of financial capital, it can weather a bad financial year.
Nice.
You know, the bank account will dip, but you're not going to have to go out of business. Yeah. And in schools, we're all about keeping ourselves together and keeping the children together. And there will be challenges. Man, do we know it here in Christchurch?
So we're in a city that has weathered significant storms, earthquakes, the long period of recovery and rebuild, and you're in a rebuild.
The mosque massacre, the gas explosion, it's just going to keep happening. Yeah. And so we need that capital level. Mm. We see ourselves as a small business facing financial turmoil. The parallels, we're not a business, we're an organisation facing emotional or psychological turmoil. Yeah. So we need a strong capital reserve, psychological capital.
And did you talk about the capital as, if you like, building the community, the school's capital?
Yes.
That it's something that's collective. A collective resource.
Yeah, and it's the sum of all the parts.
Greater than the sum of the parts.
Yes, we use that language.
And I think that appeals to schools.
Yeah.
That
and we're in this together.
So, and we are greater than the sum of our parts. Yeah. So how have you gone about it?
Well, it's not a problem because it has not been brought into the school setting. Thankfully, it's not a product that you or a program that you implement.
Yeah.
So we've never been terribly into buying or getting off the shelf and delivering packages or programs. It's not the way we work. We
I just said this is a theme of some of the most exciting schools that we work with.
Okay.
That there is an interest in doing it their own way, in finding and engaging with, and I think this is really important, that there's a huge professional development, professional learning, professional competence and meaning in saying we're going to take something and design it and make it work for us.
There is, and for us it's grounded or where we understand why we're doing that is there's an excellent book by Stephen Sterling called Sustainable Education. Not to do with the environmental sort of sustainability, but sustainability on the human beings who are inside it. And it's known as emergence, so it's part of complexity theory. Mm-hmm. So this school's run on the basis of emergence. My job is to cultivate the soil so that interesting things can grow from it and empower our staff to develop and emerge ways of being, ways of working and ways of thinking, as opposed to the
top-down
opposite model of my job is to make sure people are doing it the right way that I believe is the way it's to be done.
I have told them.
Yes.
So you're more a facilitator and nurturer.
Yep.
And the real expertise that you are bringing is A, cultivating the soil, but also recognizing which things that are emerging need to be given space and time.
Yeah, and which ones need to be pruned out.
Yeah.
And have a weed killer put on them. So it's taken 11 years I've been working here. So we have an emergent culture so that we could then say, let's take this thing and see what it means for schools.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did that play out? What kind of things did you decide to do?
We realised that it would take significant resourcing to do well. So we looked at funding streams because, you know, things do come down to money if you're going to do them well.
I'm also really pleased to hear this because it's saying if we're going to do this, we have to resource it. And that means I'm not asking someone to do it on a Sunday afternoon.
Exactly. Mm. If it's a significant piece of work, it's going to require significant resourcing.
Yeah.
We got the funding, which was great, $70,000. There's the financial capital to do the psychological capital, 18 months.
So $70,000 over 18 months to invest in this approach.
Yes, to see if it can be translated into a school, and if it can, is it of benefit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what happened there?
Then we needed to design the project. So we picked Catherine, Dr. Savage, as the external critical friend because she's a child psychologist, among other things, and there are ethics involved here. Yeah. We're messing with psychology, and we're not psychologists.
Yeah.
We had to, we did a big literature review and confirmed our initial suspicion that there isn't anything about moving it to schools. Mm-hmm. So we're...
You are innovating, and you're definitely using that funding appropriately.
Yeah, totally. We got together an interested project team of staff, not just teaching staff, we have some support staff and auxiliary staff. We're keen on this too. The first mission was to actually get some baseline data, and the PsyCap tools, the handbook, the testing has all been designed and had ethics run over it for adults.
Yeah.
So we used that straight away with our staff.
Yeah.
got individual and collective PsychApp level of staff, as any corporate would do. Yeah. But then we had the challenge of the students. Yeah. So we worked for very long days. The team worked on that under the direction of Kath and one other psychologist, designing a child's version of.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you administered the PsychApp assessments, what was the initial baseline looking like?
We didn't know what it looked like because we'd never done it before. So yeah. It's interesting to say, oh, hope sits there.
Yeah.
But is that worse than what it was a year ago?
Yeah, or, how is that? Is that a high level? Is that
we don't know. So I think I'll be able to answer that at the end. So but at the moment, we've got a baseline.
You've got a baseline, yes. But you're moving forward.
From. Yes. Yeah. And interesting was that we, the PsychApp measurement tool has three measurements. There's self, and then there's two others. Who oh, okay, work with you?
A little bit of a
Yeah. And as a whole, over the 40 employees here, lower self rating.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Are we surprised? No.
No. There you go.
So, you know, it's interesting in that technically it's a baseline.
Mm.
But actually, we know every time we measure, we change things. It's also an intervention.
Mm.
Because it brings people's attention to things, and the act of having your colleagues assess you higher than you do, that's people holding a mirror up to you.
Mm.
Did you have any feedback from staff or students or reflections of people after doing it?
We did, and it was really important. Again, you can't do this if you haven't spent time creating a place of psychological safety. You're asking people in a workplace to start having revelations about self. So we did that only after we'd established what does psychological safety mean, what are the ground rules for us discussing this, who gets to see the aggregated results, who gets to see named things, and we gave everyone their results back in a sealed envelope just for them, and we talked generally
about the results,
about what results could look like, and then they opened their envelopes after they'd left the
when
room.
When they wanted to, in the comfort and privacy of whatever space they chose.
Yes, and we established three people, different personality types, different types, as someone you might like to go to if you'd like to talk about any issue that this has surfaced for you.
Yeah. And what was the feeling? Because there's usually a general, you know, there's a general kind of vibe and chatter of how things went down.
Yeah.
What was the feeling of being?
It's a fascinated vibe. Everyone was interested to know. The staff have been really interested by it. Yeah. It's captured lots of people's imagination. And one thing we did to preserve safety was to say that we're not about leveling. I'm more hopeful than you.
Yeah.
Or gosh, I thought I was pretty optimistic, but I see you know,
I better go home and be miserable.
Eeyore over there came out higher than me, and I see that person is very unoptimistic. So we said part of the psychological safety is we're not revealing to each other what our own levels are.
It's really where are you at and how do you move forward.
And so that took that sort of buzz. Oh, I'm a six on it. Yeah. That was no.
And so after, so you've done this lovely preparatory work in creating the safety, and then done the assessments.
Yep.
And then what was the next step in terms of?
Well, then it's like rolling out the actual program. In PsychApp, they call them micro interventions.
Yeah.
Because we're being funded by the Teacher Led Innovation Fund, we've changed that and called them micro innovations.
Nice.
Because we're trying
new things in a school.
Yeah, in a school. And so it's never been done before, so it is by definition an innovation. Mm-hmm. The first rollout was the PsychApp Cafe. So I must add, although we took the baseline of staff and students and community, this project has not yet started reaching to the children because there's just no point in adults who don't deeply understand it trying to build it within children, and adults who don't have decent levels of psychological capital trying to lift that within children.
Okay, so you mentioned your first micro-intervention or micro-innovation.
Yes.
That was the PsychApp Cafe.
PsychApp Cafe was, and it's still continuing because it was deemed worth continuing, was term one this year, was a group of staff who exhibit high levels of psychological capital, meeting once a week down at the local, number four in Merivale, in an adult environment away from school, on a Monday afternoon, to actually share their understanding of the four pillars, to share worked examples of something that came up this week where you had to find multiple pathways, for example. And once that conversation started, then it was someone else said, oh, yeah, now, I remember multiple pathways saved me a while back when I had this child who was doing whatever. And
So you're thinking about your example and someone else is saying, oh, I see you've been resilient through this way and this way. And actually, that's a really optimistic look. You know, see how that comes in.
So it's like a think aloud about self and a think aloud about each other.
Yeah, what do we see?
And a team of people who actually have high levels of PSYCAP anyway. So it keeps their tank filled. Rather than picking a group who are the lowest scorers, you know, we want to keep those tanks full.
A strengths-based approach. How do we start with the ones who are already really bored and doing this?
I attended the first meeting because there is a power imbalance. And I did some intro work along with our lead teacher, Kerry. And then I exited from the group.
Exit stage left.
And guys. And they sustained it.
And that's kept going because people like it.
And they understand and they can see the link to their well-being.
So essentially what we're talking about here is a teacher-led self-reflection session that looks at how, where in our weeks are we developing and maintaining our psychological capacity.
Or using some up. I had this kid kick off and I'm lucky that I was in the frame of mind to see, again, multiple pathways was one that kept coming up. Rather than saying, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, but I could see that.
Rather than saying I had to lift, it was like I drew down on or I used because I was.
This has been a week where I have drawn down on my balance heavily.
Luckily I was up right up there.
But how nice to have a language.
It's a common language. It's powerful. Very powerful.
We know shared language is important.
Yeah, and that's been a really good outcome, is that it's given us some very important pieces of shared language.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. After PSYCAP Cafe?
Well, during PSYCAP Cafe, the mosque massacre happened. During that time period, and we were all to some degree traumatized by that. Because
you all went into lockdown.
We went like lockdown. I was teaching that afternoon, so I ended up locked down in the classroom. And several traumatic things around heightened parents occurred. During that afternoon, it terrified us on the inside. And we had some affected families, and we knew, and enough said about that. We our response when faced with such a stressful school-wide event is to say to the staff, let's take it easy on ourselves, let's cut down on extra meetings, you know, let's not do this, not do that. And we decided that we absolutely must keep going with PSYCAP Cafe.
So that was regard. That's interesting. So in that environment where you're saying trim all non-essentials, guard our resources, look after what we need to do, we're going to be giving a lot. This was regarded as a tank filler rather than a tank.
Absolutely. And so PSYCAP Cafe was proven to be, even though it was in its infancy,
a valued resource.
And investing in our people is the So that came to the end. And then we looked at what's next? The next book convention? So that group actually started exploring. They wanted to look at the children. What about the children? Because it's a natural
teacher-focused thing.
So they're actually looking at bucket filler type work at the moment. But again, it's ended up being a need to do more with the teachers first till we really get it established.
And any other work that you're doing with the teachers currently?
They are currently also networking and joining up connected services, because in Christchurch we have a lot of well-being and mental health things happening, and there's
joining the dots is a major exercise.
Joining the dots is what they are doing at the moment. They had a wonderful meeting this week with the people from Sparklers, with the people from All Right, with our critical friend, the Mana Ake people, because Mana Ake also has Leading Lights. So there's actually a danger of a lot of very good stuff swamping us, urging us to be engaged in well-being. And so the PSYCAP team at the moment, the little micro innovation that's happening at the moment is joining the dots.
Providing coherence.
To show how when you're engaging with leading lights, it's actually building SciCap. Or to show when you are looking at the sparklers resource, you're building SciCap.
Mm-hmm.
So we want it to be all part of the building SciCap journey, not episodic dips into well-being buckets.
So it's kind of it's putting a SciCap lens over what you're doing.
Yes.
And I'm guessing that that's actually going to be able to show teachers that we are already doing SciCap.
Yes.
So kind of slow down and relax.
Yeah,
we're
exactly.
already doing
you're,
it.
You're yeah. onto it. Yeah. Yes. And so we've altered the plan. We had a profound session with a leadership coach who works with our mainly our leadership team, but we actually got him to work with the SciCap team this year, because he brings again he brings non-educational work in, and he did a lot of work around burnout, and he showed us the MASLAC educators burnout survey tool.
Yeah.
And that was profound, because we were looking then at what's undermining SciCap. Well, it's like having a fuel leak. So it's not switching it to go back to deficit stuff and repairing burnt out teachers, but it's actually saying these are some things that's a common language to be aware of, and that the empathy burnout and the performance accomplishment burnout and the depersonalization burnout that shows on those will actually undermine our tank filling if we're busy SciCapping over there. So
and it's moving to a more preventive approach of saying these are the holes in the boat.
Yes.
How are we going to address them,
yes.
please? Sorry, the horrible mixing of metaphors between
That's
fuel
great.
Tanks and boats.
We're mad on metaphors here. Then I'm going to chuck another one in. It was that was the moment that those teachers said, this is a piece of professional learning that's putting a fence at the top of the cliff rather than parking some ambulances down the bottom from when we crash and burn.
Yeah, nice. So they really see this as an investment in them.
Yes.
In preventative well-being.
Yeah.
Proactive preventative strategies.
And that
to support
insight
them.
Into that burnout tool was really, really profound on people.
You've got this project that's funded as an innovation, and you have developed an understanding of baseline of SciCap, and that's around, so what micro-interventions will we use? What approaches are we going to implement? Can I just ask, are there any particular pedagogical frameworks or tools that you as a school use to help you make a decision about which thing to do when?
We have a framework called SOLO taxonomy, structure of observable learning outcomes.
Yeah.
But actually, for any learning and deciding what to do is just looking at what are we doing, how are we going, and what do we need to do next?
Yeah.
Without going into the complexities of SOLO taxonomy, that's the tool we use.
So that's the tool.
It's a place. It's like with regard to anything. What exactly are we doing at the moment? Mm. How well are we doing that, and how do we know?
Yeah.
And therefore, what's the next step? So we can usually run that measure across things and say, this is the most important next step. Of all of the next steps, this one is standing proud on the horizon.
So this is really interesting, because this is one of the things that is emerging for us in the work that we're doing across schools, that the schools that are implementing and having most success with their implementation and the positive impact it's having on staff are the ones who have solid frameworks and that they use to make those decisions. Because otherwise, which thing will we do first?
Yes.
It's hit and miss, isn't
it? Yeah, it is.
It's go into a darkened room and think, pin the tail on the donkey.
Yeah, it's 101 good ideas for Monday.
Yeah.
Which infuses everyone in the room at the time.
And it's like, let's give you a tool to help you make a good decision about which one of these is appropriate for us to do first.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things we talk about in wellbeing in schools is that this idea that wellbeing is taught and caught. That as well as having taught curriculum, there's everything that happens in the environment of the school, in the relationships between people, in the structures and processes that can support or diminish well-being.
Yep.
And so what we notice is that when people are selecting a curriculum, there's usually some reasonable people get together, they establish some criteria and they choose, and that's quite a limited decision. But deciding what you're going to do as things unfold over several years to influence your environment is huge. And often a well-being team are sent away to go and make some decisions. But it's kind of not much better than hit and miss if you don't have a rigorous framework to guide you.
Yeah.
And so you have solo taxonomy and everyone knows it and it's a shared approach.
Yep.
And that's got to be really helpful.
Yeah, it is. Not just in this work, but across everything. Yeah. It's very valuable.
And to me, one of the pieces that I'm curious about is, we know that we want to support staff well-being. And in addition to, here's a well-being plan, here's what you need to do for your well-being. I think what we're all becoming really aware of is that the process matters, and developing teachers' professional capacity.
Exactly.
And acknowledging the importance of their profession and their professional learning and having autonomy and meaning in their work is massive.
It's one of our biggest budget spends.
Tell us more about that.
Professional, the adults are going to drive what happens. So we spend a significant proportion of our annual budget on developing our staff. We expose them to the thought leaders, the authors of, rather than people who are peddling an interpretation of someone's idea. There's plenty of PD peddlers around. We just say you get it from the horse's mouth. So when Carol Dweck was in New Zealand, we made sure that our staff worked with Carol Dweck rather than going to a mindset franchise watered down. Wherever we can, we get the authors, the researchers to come and work directly with our staff.
So you have a commitment that staff well-being is more than fruit bowls and massage. It's also about taking seriously the professionalism and professional development.
That's what this is about. Yeah. It's totally about that. Mm-hmm. It just so happens that PsychAP is a part.
And this is another way in which you develop the professional capacity.
Yes. What emerges from it can be applied elsewhere. It's like, oh yes, that's also raising PsychAP, but look what we've discovered about learning, or look what we've discovered about something else. It sprouts off in tangents. The work that we've been doing has led us to try and seek what are the longest levers. What of all of the things that we can do, what are the ones that are going to have the biggest impact? We know that lever will do this, but what about the one
that's the most important step to make the biggest? What's going to give us the biggest impact for the
Staff well-being and building PsychAP? What emerged was the book called The Progress Principle. Research done at Stanford. I think 5,000. Employees and 5,000 managers or leaders. Most important things to support your morale at work, and morale, touching on PsychAP things, but your morale, your well-being, your whatever. Clear and consistent vision, monitoring, resourcing, all of the managerial speak. Of all of that, those respondees, they all came back in. There was a fifth one. There were four that emerged from leaders, from the workers. There was a fifth one sitting in there that did not feature at all in the leaders' responses. So the researchers said something is crook here. There should have been crossover. Maybe all of those leaders simultaneously forgot that one. So let's do it again, and let's put the five out to both groups and get them to rank them.
Yeah.
The one that was most important to all of the workers was rated least important by the leaders.
What was it?
It was actually celebrating small gains.
Wow.
It wasn't having an amazing company vision document.
We're talking about the Progress Principle by Steve Kramer and Teresa Amabile.
Yes, indeed. Great. Yeah, profound. Because you know what we can do? We can actually celebrate small gains. That is a long lever that's having a huge psychological effect, and I don't need to have a staff retreat to rewrite a vision. I don't need to design a new performance appraisal system. All those things that leaders thought were the most influences on my morale in this place. I can pop out of here at morning tea time and go and target any teacher and celebrate a small gain that I've just noticed they make with a kid or something they've been doing.
But I can see why that's... There's a whole load of research that would explain why that is so important.
Yes.
And if we think about... If you are celebrating small gains, what are you doing? You're communicating regularly with people.
Yes.
You're validating and valuing what they're doing.
Yes.
They know you notice and pay attention. You're creating micro moments of positive emotion and support.
Yes.
And you're building relationships.
Yeah.
These are all vital.
I know.
And it's like we don't, like you say, we don't do it once a year on a 3-day retreat.
Yeah.
You do it every 5 minutes when you pop into someone's office.
And yet the vast majority of leaders in that research didn't mention it as even being a thing, and even when it was put in front of them, they said, oh, that's the least most important. But the workers were screaming for it. They mentioned it when leaders didn't, and they ranked it as number one when they had to rank it.
Wow. So do you think, so in that survey, even the leaders who were doing it didn't realise how important it was?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's been profound for me.
Yeah. Wow.
Get out of your office, working on your school charter and your vision statement.
I'm so strategic.
I know. We've got a great vision here.
Get out and talk to people and talk
exactly.
about doing well.
Get out of your caravan.
Yeah. Isn't that lovely? That, you know, if another school came to you and said, we want to start doing some of this stuff, what would be the big advice you'd give them?
Honour it with resource. This isn't, we visited a school once and, put up some posters and we're done. Honour it with resource. Seek external expertise. We're dabbling in someone else's profession here.
Mm-hmm.
Respect that. We're not psychologists. Unless, of course, you are a psychologist and a school principal, then go for it.
Yeah, but, otherwise, get some expertise on board.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We don't have a crack at fixing our own heat pumps. We call in an electrician. So honour psychology. Adults first. So don't rush it onto the children.
Lovely. Yeah. It's so good to hear. And tell me, what would be the one thing that you would want to say to, the one thing you'd want to see teachers and parents doing that you think would make the biggest difference in young people's well-being?
I think to take that celebrate small gains thing to heart.
To your parenting and your teaching.
Absolutely. And just dial back on the, that's good, but next, what's your next step? You've just managed to.
I always think of that as the Grand National or Melbourne Cup approach to life. That, you know, we've come over a massive challenge, and instead of going, "Wow, would you look at the jump we've just done?" We're like, "Right next."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So stop and appreciate, celebrate small gains.
Yes.
And that's so consistent with a strengths-based approach.
Yep.
It's notice the small things that have gone right.
Yeah.
And reflect them back.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Because there will be things that go wrong.
Yeah.
And to be ready for those, we have to have had a full tank of celebrating the things that have gone right.
Yeah, and it's much easier to hear about the stuff that's gone wrong from somebody who has previously seen all the good in you.
Yeah.
So you're actually building a pathway. You're building a broadband relationship when you celebrate all the small gains and notices the strengths in people. So that when you need to have some difficult conversation, you've got a broadband connection to have.
Yeah. And those difficult conversations are always still going to have to happen. And being involved in a focus on well-being does not mean that we have this veneer of happy people skipping around the worksite.
We're still going to deal with difficult stuff.
People are going to have burnouts. People, there's going to be depression and anxiety. This isn't a happy rainbow paint we're putting across the school.
If you could only do one thing for the rest of your life to support well-being in others, what would it be?
Wow, what a question. I think it would be, it's cheesy, but it's along the lines of smell the roses. It just...
Appreciate the good stuff.
Appreciate the good stuff. Wake up 70 years old and go, I was resentful and bitter for my whole life. That was it, gone.
Okay.
Just enjoy it.
And so, for you personally, what's the strategy that really works for you to turn things around when you feel frustrated or down? What works for you?
For me, I turn to the 5 ways to well-being.
You take your own medicine.
Okay. I came close to burnout 2 years ago, didn't manage my well-being well at all. And what, apart from a really good counsellor, what got me back on my feet and has kept me on my feet is really active attention to those 5 ways for well-being and the little tips and suggestions on the website to make sure that I'm being present, I'm taking notice, I'm smelling the roses, physical exercise, diet.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with us. Mike, it's been fantastic to talk to you today. And again, it's really inspiring to come to schools that have that deep commitment to the professionalism of their teachers and how that needs to be supported and resourced as an integral part of doing this work. And I love the independence and innovation that you're bringing to this work.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Lovely to meet you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Bringing Wellbeing to Life on ORFM Dunedin. If you'd like to learn more, our book, The Educator's Guide to Whole School Wellbeing, is available from nziwr.co.nz from early 2020. You can also listen to a podcast of this show on oar.org.nz, on nziwr.co.nz, and you can also subscribe to Apple Podcasts. I'm Dr. Denise Quinlan. Thank you for listening. To learn more about the latest research and practice in school wellbeing, join us at the Wellbeing in Education Conference in Christchurch from the 2nd to the 4th of April and Auckland from the 6th to the 7th of April 2020. For more information, go to nziwr.co.nz or conference.co.nz/WENZ20.
This program was first broadcast on ORFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.